Now, how have people in Mongolia and Tanzania made a living by tending their herds of large animals? That's one of the subjects that we're looking at on this week's Archaeology. And our guest has been researching this area. Lee G. Broderick is a zoo archaeologist. I wonder how much you know about pastoralists. That's what they're called, the people that have been tending these animals. A journey of discovery is about to begin for both you and I. It's a delight to welcome Lee G. Broderick to the studio, who's based at the University of York's Archaeology Department. Hello and welcome.
Good afternoon, Ellie. Thanks for having
me. As you walked into the studio with a name like that, are you sure you're not a film star?
Or Not yet.
You're working on it, are you? Great, great name. Let's start right at the beginning. What is zoo archaeology?
Zoo archaeology is a bit like regular archaeology, except instead of looking at bits of flint and pot, we get to play with animal bones. So we look at animal bones and use them to look at how people were living in the past. So as always, rather a paleontologist might look at just old animals, whereas we're interested in what old animals can tell us about how people used to live.
So that then creates the story of how people lived their lives.
That's
centuries
right, yes.
ago.
Because if you think about the past, you know, for most of people's time on this planet, really our interactions with plants and with animals has been the economy.
Yes, and I suppose the interaction with animals would tell you an awful lot about people's lifestyles, because at the era that you're going back to, people would have really had to live off the land more than we rely living on the land in the 21st century.
Well, that's right. We're in a very lucky, privileged position, aren't we? And
So with your particular area, pastoralists. Now, the pastoralists, just describe the pastoralists. You see, we were talking about this earlier, like pastoralists, somebody thought it was to do with milk. Pastoralists, to me, you could associate to church. And I've never come across this term at all.
Well, the first time I heard it was actually at my first school when I was about 9 years old. And my geography teacher said to me, there's two different kinds of agriculture, which is one involves plants and one involves animals, such as arable and pastoral. And really, if you're looking beyond the Western world now, you think about it, it's very difficult to specialise in either animals or pastoral, or animals or plants, because you need to live and that involves having both resources of food. So it's a very specialised form of agriculture, which around most of the world involves some form of pastoralism and transhumance, moving with your herd as you go through the year and finding the best places to feed them.
Fascinating stuff. I mean, how did you get involved in this particular area? You would have to have a real interest in it. It's not something that you can fake interest in, is it? Really?
Well, I brought two little toys along for you to look at there.
I know, I've got a cow here.
They represent not only my research now, but really my childhood. So I grew up in Cornwall, surrounded by dairy farmers. So
that's where the cow comes from. It looks like a Frisian, but I'm not sure that it is. And after my sort of test this afternoon, I'm rubbish at things. It was very embarrassing. And this here is one of the Maasai warriors, head of a Maasai warrior.
My father grew up in Kenya, so he used to spend or have regular holidays out there when I was young. So that then sort of enabled me to see not only, you know, the usual sort of pastoral dairy farming we have in this country, but then the way that people lived with their livestock and their cattle in Kenya. And that was somehow I must have made that connection. I've always been interested in how people go about doing that.
So why didn't you go into farming rather than going into zoo archaeology?
I think these days you need a lot of money to get set up, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose you do, really. So when you started your research, tell us about the parts of the world you've been working in. It's Tanzania and Mongolia.
They're the two areas that I'm sort of actively involved in at the moment, yes.
And what have you been actually looking at?
Well, in Tanzania we put together a project and we did some field work last year. Which involved myself and a colleague from Finland and two from America as well, along with some local Tanzanian collaborators. And what we were trying to establish there was the spread of pastoralism as a way of life and an economy down through Africa. Because if you think about it, that's a very important question in terms of how people live, because it's the dominant way of life there now. But there's still a lot of hunter-gatherers and foragers there, and those people were there before the pastoralists came down. And in the archaeological record, you can see we've got cattle domestication happening probably indigenously in Africa in what's now the Sahara about 8,500 years ago. And a little bit later on, sheep and goats come across from the Near East, from Western Asia. And that's then a very slow spread from there, from the Sahara down to Kenya, from about 8,500 years ago to about 4,500 years ago. So it's quite a long time with a slow spread. And then we see nothing until suddenly 2,000 years ago, which is a much shorter gap, they're right down literally at the Cape, at Cape Town. And they've only got sheep, there's no cattle. The cattle come later.
And is this because they've imported the animals, or is it because they've travelled? It's as civilization has grown and they've travelled through the world.
Well, linguistic evidence would suggest that there's been a spread down mainly from West Africa. And that was one hypothesis as to how pastoralism ended up in South Africa, was down the west coast. But if you think about the west coast of Africa, A, you've got the skeleton coast, the desert there in Namibia. And then above that, of course, you've got all the rainforests. So that's quite a lot of obstacles to get pastoralists down. So more commonly now, I think the commonly held theory is that they're coming down the east coast and down the Rift Valley, where there's a space these days where there isn't tsetse fly, which is another major impediment to livestock coming down. So we went out to Tanzania to try and pick up the beginning of that spread from Kenya down to the south.
How fascinating. Well, talk away from One Direction to my first guest this afternoon, who's Lee G. Broderick, who is a zoo archaeologist who's been working on a project in Mongolia and Tanzania looking at pastoralists. These are people who made a living by tending their herds of large animals. Now, when you say large animals, how large are we talking about? I mean, you brought in a cow here, but I would think in these parts of the world, probably things that we wouldn't think of tending, we'd see them as wild beasts.
No, and normally we tend to talk in zooarchaeology about principal domesticates, which are pretty much the same around the world as sheep, goats, cows and pigs. Not so many pigs to parts of the world that I'm looking at. But those are the sort of the main ones, and then you get supplementary beasts, as it were, like camels. So boar,
they
would be wild, but they're not so commonly used. I don't think they fit in so well with either the environment or the way of life. Although there are pig pastoralists in Corsica and Sardinia, I think.
Camels is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think because of stories and Christianity and things you read in the Bible, you know, camels are so important. So I think everybody assumes that camels have just been around since time began.
Nobody really knows where camels were first domesticated or anything else.
Really?
Although we know they originally evolved as a species in North America, the same as horses, which are another very hardy animal. Particularly suited to cold conditions, which is why they're so important in Mongolia.
You've been looking at, obviously, how they all worked centuries ago. Has anything changed, you know, the way they looked after these animals compared to 21st century farming methods? Or are they places in the world where nothing's really moved on? You know, there are places that you can go where time has stood still. And it's not been spoilt in any way at all.
I think Mongolia is a fantastic example of that. We went out there to investigate the transition from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age. And again, it's a pastoralist economy. There's no evidence at all of them growing plants or other crops. So, you know, the zooarchaeological evidence there is very important. But what we found was that not only are their practices, so far as we can tell from the archaeological record, very similar to what happens now in terms of the time of year animals are slaughtered, proportions of herds, etc. But they're actually living in exactly the same places. They move from winter to summer campsite, and nine times out of ten, the campsites we're finding archaeologically are directly exactly where the modern-day summer and winter campsites are in this region of central Mongolia we've been working in.
How interesting. Really interesting. And presumably, even to do your research, you have to find the remains. We know in England, don't we? We know in York and North Yorkshire. Just it's great, isn't it? The remains that...
It's tripping over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But when you go to other parts of the world, I mean, you'll have an idea of where these people might have been centuries ago. Is it hard to find the bones and the remains
of animals? It is much harder. Not least because the areas that we're talking about here are very dry and not very built up. So for two reasons, you don't have the build-up of soils that you've got here. So typically we're not digging any further than about 20 centimetres below the surface, and often we're finding Bronze Age, so sort of 2,000 to 3,000-year-old ceramics lying on top of the surface. So in both places, we do a lot of field walking to try and identify sites. And then also we do what we call shovel pitting, where we dig sort of a shovel-sized hole every 20 metres or so, and working in a grid formation. So lots and lots of holes. And if we start coming up with a sort of concentration of finds from several holes in a close area, then we'll revisit and dig more trenches on a bigger scale.
What's the most exciting thing you've found recently? There's always one thing that stands out, isn't there?
There is. I don't even know how to begin answer that. I mean, I've recently working on some other material back in the lab, and that's a very different environment again to doing field work. I'm particularly pleased, I think, to have identified some remains which were previously categorised as just burnt animal, associated with some monuments in Mongolia. Mm-hmm. And we're now pretty certain what animal that was, and this has been going on for, you know, hundreds of years, however long.
So it's like a discovery.
Yeah, since Russians first started going out there and doing research. So
that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And can you say what it is? Or,
well, it's not published yet, but probably 80% of them are sheep, so, which doesn't sound very exciting.
But it is if you've been working on it for years and years and trying to find out what it is.
It is, because before we went out and started looking at these domestic sites in Mongolia, all the remains came from these monumental sites. That was all that had been excavated. And there was a series of horse skulls deposited in these mounds, which led to the assumption that they ate horse and that was it. Maybe they didn't even farm horses. Maybe they just hunted wild horses. That was the Mongolian economy up until quite recently when we started working out there.
Well, I now know, as does everybody at home, the exact work that a zooarchaeologist does. Thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you for
having me. It's always great to learn something new that's happening. That's Lee G. Broderick, who is based at the University of York's Archaeology Department.